Chapter 28. Linda was unable to walk or talk. She couldn't answer questions. All she was capable of was moaning and crying. Chief Robertson was concerned, and he thought it would be wise to transfer her to Sparks Hospital in Fort Smith rather than the small hospital in Van Buren, where she might be harassed by the press and curious townspeople. There, in another town, in another county, she could have a quiet place to sleep without the clamoring of the press in the municipal complex. She would also be placed on a suicide watch. He wanted to be very careful that he wasn't violating any of the rights she possessed as a person innocent until proven guilty. He asked Hicks to take her across the river to Sparks Hospital, and she was carried into his police car by the same woman who helped her get out of the car. Hicks sped out of town south on Highway 59 and got on Interstate 540 that took him across the Arkansas River. He hoped the damn press hadn't followed him, but he took a sachet by the other hospital in town in order to throw off anyone who might be following him. It took about 15 minutes for him to reach the hospital in the middle of the second largest city in Arkansas. With a rich history of lawlessness, it had been founded as a way to keep peace between the Osage and the Cherokees and the settlers in the Indian nation of Oklahoma. In its heyday, there were as many saloons and whorehouses in Fort Smith as there were churches. The infamous federal judge Isaac Parker and his team of deputies held court over the outlaws who committed crimes in both Arkansas and the Indian Territory. There was still an attitude of frontier independence in Fort Smith that was looked down on by those in the capital city of Little Rock. Furniture companies had traditionally prospered here on the backs of poorly paid employees, and the big factories like Whirlpool and Gerber Foods found that pervading attitude an exceptional arena in which to make money for themselves and their investors. There were two country clubs in town, a nice mall, and more than a few good restaurants. People in Fort Smith cheered for their high school football and basketball teams, drove the 60 miles north to Fayetteville to call the Hogs at Razorback football games, and went to church. Anything that smacked of culture had a hard time surviving. Hicks pulled into the Sparks emergency entrance and waited for someone to help him get Linda out of the car. She was still moaning and limp, and she acted as if she had no idea where she was. He opened the door when a male nurse tapped on his window. Hicks opened his door and leaned against the car.
"I've got a prisoner I want you to keep overnight. She's out of it, and we don't want anything to happen to her before we get her arraigned tomorrow morning in Crawford County Circuit Court."
"I know. We got the call," the young man said as he rolled a wheelchair next to the back passenger door. He was tall and muscular and had long black hair that was pulled back and secured with a rubber band. He easily lifted Linda out of the car and into the chair, and she didn't even look at him. Hicks thanked the nurse and climbed back behind the wheel. He arched his back and rotated his shoulders two or three times. He was tired, bone tired. All he wanted to do was get home. He drove back to Van Buren as fast as he'd driven to Fort Smith. He was eager to see his wife and get some of Wanda's cooking on a fork. After a warmed-up supper of fried potatoes, pinto beans, and pork chops, Hicks fell into his chair in front of the television. Channel 5 News was reporting the arrest of Linda Martin for the murder of her mother. They showed him ushering her into the police station. He winced at how fat he looked. He blamed his weight gain on Wanda's home cooking. He'd have to tell her to ease up on the fried food. When the news was over, he went into the bathroom and cleaned up a little. He was going back to the police station. He'd been demoted from chief to assistant chief by Mayor Gene Bell, who thought Van Buren needed a better trained man as chief. Gary Robertson had been a patrolman for the Arkansas State Police, scored high on some procedural classes, and had come highly recommended to the mayor, who hired him on the spot. Hicks, of course, was bitter and talked about quitting. But Van Buren was his home, and he and his family didn't want to move, so he swallowed his pride and took orders from Robertson, who was a cocky bastard and didn't really care a hoot about Van Buren. The town was simply a stepping stone to something better, Robertson had said to more than a few people. There were still folks milling around the complex when Hicks returned. The mayor was there, as well as Trellin Ball, the sheriff. Garrick Feldman was there with his pen, frantically scribbling notes on a pad he flipped from one page to the next. Hicks watched him for a minute, amazed at how fast Feldman could write. The sheriff signaled Hicks to come over to a quiet corner with him.
"How's Mrs. Martin doing?" he asked after he was sure no one was around who could eavesdrop. "Oh, man," Hicks said. "She's so pitiful. I feel sorry for the woman. Everyone in town knows Ruyan Park had a mean streak a mile wide. I'm sure she deserved killing."
The sheriff prided himself on being a Christian man, a decent family man, and a man the people of Crawford County trusted to carry out the laws. He pondered what Hicks had said, and was inclined to agree with him.
"Well, Wayne, we have to follow the law. Did she mean to do it? Was it premeditated? By that I mean, did she really drive up here with a little boy in the back seat with the intent to kill her mother? I don't think so.
You know, I kind of wish we hadn't wired Howard Martin's law office," Hicks said.
The sheriff pulled a toothpick out of his pocket and stuck it in his mouth.
"What kind of a bastard turns in the mother of his children? I know I've asked that question over and over. I keep thinking about that movie, To Kill a Mockingbird. Did you ever see it, Wayne?"
"No, I don't go to the picture shows very often."
The sheriff smiled, remembering that his daughter had begged him and Ruby to go see it with her. Ruthie had seen it once, and she wanted her parents to go with her again. They'd gone and were glad they had.
"Well, this guy," Trellin explained, "was a real bully in town, and he was killed by a real gentleman who wasn't quite right. He stuck a knife in the bully's ribs in order to save this little boy's life. The sheriff of the town said the case was closed. He said the bully must have simply fallen on his own knife."
Hicks understood what the sheriff was saying. There were a lot of wells around Crawford County that nobody even knew about. Abandoned houses with abandoned wells. The right thing to do would be to drop those tapes into a well somewhere. Yep, that would be the right thing to do, and God wouldn't think nothing about it.